AP Radio News. I'm Rita Foley. Donald Trump says that story in the New York Times about him kissing or groping two women without their consent is a total fabrication. Megan Toohey is one of the reporters who wrote that story, and she interviewed Trump for it.
He got increasingly agitated as I continued my questions started to yell at me and told me that I was a disgusting human being.
She was on CBS this morning. Separately, a People magazine reporter writes that Trump physically attacked her years ago as she interviewed him, but she was too ashamed to say anything at the time. Trump tweets this morning that incident, quote, did not happen. The U.S. launched missiles against a target in Yemen this morning. AP National Security correspondent Sagar Magani is at the Pentagon.
Pentagon spokesman Peter Cook says the self-defense strikes targeted radar sites involved in recent missile launches against U.S. warships. He says initial assessments are the sites were destroyed. A U.S. official says an American destroyer conducted the Tomahawk missile launches on sites in remote areas with little risk of civilian casualties.
Boston police have identified a man they say shot and critically wounded two officers. Nine other officers were treated at a local hospital for various injuries and stress after the gun battle. Police say the shooter was 33-year-old Kirk Figueroa, who was wearing body armor and opened fire with an assault rifle. He was shot and killed by police, who say he was not on their radar. A big cheer went up in Stockholm this morning as the Swedish Academy announced it was awarding the Nobel Prize in Literature to Bob Dylan. Bob Dylan?
For having created new poetic expressions within the great American song tradition.
The Dow is down 166. This is AP Radio News. Samsung is now recalling its Galaxy Note 7 smartphone and the phones that it made available as replacements after the original Note 7 started catching fire. AP correspondent Diane Kepley has this.
The expanded recall is the latest response to overheating that caused burns and property damage. It now includes not only the original smartphones, but also the replacements that were offered last month. The Consumer Product Safety Commission is warning consumers to stop using those phones immediately.
Police in Germany say they're investigating the parents of a six-week-old baby girl after it was alleged they were trying to sell the baby on eBay. Police in Duisburg, Germany, say the baby was listed on the internet auction site on Tuesday at a price of $5,500. Authorities raided the parents' apartment yesterday and say they found evidence suggesting the posting was made from their internet connection. Rita Foley, AP Radio News.
Now today's top federal headlines. The Air Force is beginning to overhaul the way it evaluates officers for the 21st century. The revamp could take up to a year and a half. The new system may allow officers to provide more information to promotion boards or change stratification levels. The Air Force rebuilt its enlisted evaluation system last year. A new field manual from the Army aims to help military leaders improve readiness. It's titled Train to Win in a Complex World and contains items such as how to plan training events, write after-action reports, and carry out many other training tasks. It can be found online or downloaded from the Army Training Network. Cyber acquisitions for the Marine Corps get a speed boost. The branch says its Systems Command Cyber Advisory Team completed its first emergency cyber acquisition this summer. It was part of a new process to help the Corps respond to cyber warfighting needs quicker. It allows the Marine cyber protection teams to conduct operations on-site and remotely protect the network. Find these stories and more at federalnewsradio.com. I'm Eric White.
If you're planning a cost-of-living party for retired friends, you might want to make it a BYO, as in bring-your-own-bottle affair. This is Federal News Radio, senior correspondent Mike Causey. And why this crass kid stuff recommendation for a senior's bash? Well, it's simple. Money. Parties are supposed to be fun, right? But federal, military, and Social Security retirees aren't going to be happy next Tuesday when the government tells them what their 2017 cost-of-living adjustment will be. And while the number won't be official until the 18th, we're probably looking at a COLA of just over $120 for the entire year. So why so little when the price of long-term care insurance, federal health premiums, just about everything else is going up? Is this politics, or is Uncle Sam simply using the wrong yardstick to measure inflation? What's your share? Sign up for my column at federalnewsradio.com/alerts. I'm Mike Causey.
Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, WFED.
Welcome to Ask the Chief Information Officer on Federal News Radio. Every week, Federal News Radio Executive Editor Jason Miller interviews CIOs of federal agencies about the latest directives, IT challenges, and successes. Now, your host, Jason Miller.
My guest today is Dawn Leaf, the recently retired Labor Department Chief Information Officer. This is exciting. It's kind of an exit interview. I love catching up with people who've spent their, you know, most of their careers in government. So, Dawn, thank you for coming on the show one last time.
My pleasure.
I don't mean one last time. I'm sure we'll talk to you again. But for Ask the CIO, this is what I like to say, the icing on the cake for the CIOs of the federal government. Let's just get to the reasons why you decide now. You know, what made you decide today was the right time to retire? And what's your plans moving forward?
For me, it was pretty straightforward. I think, like a lot of people, I ran those retirement planners, you know, where you put in your life expectancy, you put in what your resources are, and it sort of plans what your retirement would be like. And I think once you turn 50 or 55 or 60 or 65 or 70, all of your lines fit on one page. And you really, or at least I felt you, I really needed to look at all the things on my bucket list, how many lines I had, and they were a pretty good match. And it was the right thing. I want to spend my time, you know, with my family and pursuing other things, personal interest.
So it's interesting that rarely does it match up. Many times you hear someone say, well, I just wanted to do something different. I wanted to go into industry, or I wanted to try something different, or I had an opportunity to go back and work in this specific field that I've always wanted to do. So this is really a true retirement, which is, I have to say, unusual.
Well, it is. I did spend the first 20 years of my career in the private sector, and I think that's pretty common knowledge. Most of it was at Westinghouse Electric, which then became Northrop Grumman, was bought by Northrop. The only thing I have at all of interest in IT is that I may do some voluntary work, some voluntary consulting with my old college, McDaniel College. It's a small liberal arts school in Westminster. Roger Casey, the president, he reached out about a year ago. I think he's interested in having alumni reach back to the school with different experiences. So I may do that a little bit.
And otherwise, your plans are just to rest and relax and, as you said, spend time with family, do things you want to do. No plans right now, at least, for consulting with the federal government. No plans to work in industry again. This is a real retirement. Maybe not Florida real retirement, but real retirement.
It is. I'm not planning to go in the private sector. You won't find me marketing after the fact, not planning to come back as an annuitant. One of the things, I will stay in the D.C. area. I don't know. I think many people, we go into D.C. when we have company, right? And that's when we do all the really great cultural things in D.C. So I do want to spend some time doing that.
You got to be a tourist in your own city. I'm a big fan of that, too. So let's talk about your career a little bit. You worked in government for about half your career. The other half, as you said, Westinghouse, later Northrop Grumman. So let's just focus on the government career. You came to NIST, was one of your jobs. You worked at Labor. Talk about where else have you worked and how long, talk about the last 4 or 5 years at Labor.
I was working as a program manager under contract to NASA on the EOS-DIS program and to NOAA on the AWIPS program. And it was about that time that several of my, basically my customers said, you know, we need people in government. Why don't you consider applying? So I did. I went to work at the Patent and Trademark Office, originally for Dennis Shaw, who was the CIO there. I think he is one of the great CIOs of all time in the federal government. He's a real role model. I followed him to the Smithsonian when he was the CIO there. And then I took a position as the CIO at the Bureau of Industry and Security, and then as the Deputy CIO, CTO at Commerce. And then I did the stint in the NIST Information Technology Lab as the exec for the cloud computing program, which was great. It was a great experience. I learned a lot, but really wanted to finish my career in the more hands-on operational side. So I went to Labor in 2012. I went in as the deputy CIO. They had never had a full-time CIO at Labor. So that position was really created separate from the Assistant Secretary for Administration and Management in 2014, and I was the first person appointed to that position. And Basically, at Labor, I think the one thing I am very, very proud of is that I developed over time to be a more mature, tolerant manager who, I don't know, I think you can measure how effective somebody is if you ask the people who work for that person, what do they think? And if people would willingly work for you a second time, I consider that to be the highest compliment. So at Labor, the OCIO got the highest employee viewpoint survey score in terms of employee trusting their management team and feeling like they were respected as employees. So I think that's something that I really developed. And of course, it was the whole management team in the OCIO, but developed that ability to try to set values in an organization. And that was over a career. As far as the techie stuff, there's lots of stuff that's all out there. There's cloud email, improving the infrastructure. There's the first disaster recovery plan, the first failover site. I mean, we did a lot of technical improvements at Labor, although there's still a lot to go.
And I'm sure we will talk more about both the things you accomplished and the how much more there is to go. But let me back up for a sec. It's interesting that when you kind of chart your career, you've had time at small agencies like Smithsonian, or PTO is a big dog in a small in a bigger agency. And then you've went over to NIST. I mean, of all the jobs, is there one that you kind of enjoyed more than the other?
Each of those jobs have really great things about the environment and about the job. So the Smithsonian, of course, is very creative. The people are very dedicated. The curators in the museums, the archivists, the librarians, they value diversity for diversity's sake, which is a good thing. They still work cooperatively. It's a wonderful environment. But you learn something in each job. So at NIST, you're right, it's an academic environment. It was a great experience. I learned how to work with industry there. We had the big work groups with the 2,500 people or more. But to really be there long term, I think you need to be someone who wants to pursue a PhD or wants to learn for the sake of learning. If you're task and results oriented, which is more my bent, then working in a CIO role or a CTO role is a better fit. So I would say that all those experiences really prepared me for the job at Labor, and I feel like I did a good job there. I'm proud of what I did, but I'm also happy, you know, to move on. I think work is great, but it's just work. It's not your life, so you need to have a life too.
One thing about moving to a place like Labor, and I've followed Labor for several years, I obviously knew several of your predecessors who were CIOs. Pat Pizzella, I spent probably the most time with, who wore those multiple hats. He was the Assistant Secretary for Management. He was the CIO. He was the Chief Human Capital Officer. He was the Chief Privacy Officer. When the split happened in terms of you came in as Deputy CIO and then someone eventually said, you know, Don, why don't you just take the full CIO role? Talk a little bit of how and when that happened and why. Because for years, this is the way it was. And you rarely see that kind of change in government.
First of all, let me say that Labor, in my opinion, is still a very insular culture. You have people that have been there for decades, and they will go from agency to agency in various positions. And it's also a very federated and decentralized culture in all things, including IT. It's interesting that you mentioned Pizzella, because I read a memo that he wrote back in 2004 encouraging all of the agencies to voluntarily work together to consolidate. So in 2016, that consolidation had still not occurred. In 2011, which is when former Deputy Secretary Seth Harris was in place, and he served as the acting secretary for some time, he tried very hard to move the culture toward a more department view as opposed to individual bureau view. And it was at that time, with encouragement from OMB, that the department decided to create the full-time CIO position, just so that you had a person who that was their sole job. It wasn't one of several. It was really a dedicated exec. And since I was already in place, I'd been in place 2 years, I had a good working relationship with Assistant Secretary Kerr. It was logical, I think, for them to just appoint me to the position.
And I know it kind of was, as you well know, I followed this closely. It was one of those very quiet changes, but it was an important change because of, as you said, because of labor's history. And I think it's something we'll get into later on in our discussion. But when you became full-time CIO, how big of a change was it? I mean, you were already deputy CIO, so you got a new business card, but was it more than that? Did you feel like, you know, because you were already in many ways doing the work as a full-time CIO?
It was not a big change, particularly because we went for a long time before, as you know, probably posting and hiring a deputy CIO. And that was, by the way, one of my prerequisites for my own retirement. I didn't feel comfortable leaving the position until there was a deputy on board. And Gundeep Ahluwalia started in August, you know, a couple of months ago. But it wasn't a big change because the reporting structure didn't change. I still reported to Assistant Secretary Kerr. As I said, we had a very solid working relationship. He has always been a real champion for IT. So it was really just a matter of formalizing the position. It was probably fortunate that it happened right before FATARA was put into law, although that was not a driver. We didn't know that when the change was made.
All right, you mentioned FATARA, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act. Let's take a break and come back. We can jump right into that. My guest today is Dawn Leaf, the recently retired former Labor Department Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Why do 8 out of 10 drivers prefer Lyft over the competition? Could be that you earn up to $1,500 a week driving your own car during hours you choose. Give enough rides each week and you can keep up to 95% commission. That's right, 95%. Better yet, we'll start you off with a $500 bonus. That's right, $500 for each new Lyft driver in Washington, D.C. And you'll only earn more from there. Whether you're putting money toward a mortgage, saving for vacation, or just looking for a better way to earn, choose Lyft. Apply at LyftDC.com. That's LYFTDC.com today. While you jot that down, here's another fun fact. Lyft is the only app that allows tipping, and 60% of our rides tip the driver. Because at Lyft, drivers come first. Be your own boss, pick your own schedule, and get paid weekly. Experience the difference of Lyft and pocket that $500 bonus by applying at LYFTDC.com today. Terms apply.
I'm Aileen Black.
And I'm Gigi Shum. Together, we host Women of Washington.
You'll hear the inspiring and amazing stories of women who have paved their own path to success and achieved incredible milestones in their careers.
Some have leaned in. Others took an unconventional approach. All have made an impact on the business landscape of Washington, D.C. and beyond.
Tune in Wednesday afternoons at 1 for Women of Washington, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Women of Washington.
Tom Temin here, coming up on Friday's Federal Drive. Are you using the word password as your password? Are you turning off annoying two-factor authentication? You may have a case of cybersecurity fatigue. NIST computer scientist Mary Theofanos explains what it is and some possible cures. Plus, what to do about new contractor pay reporting rules. Join me Friday morning starting at 6 for the Federal Drive with Tom Temin. FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM.
Your agency, your executives, your mission. Find out if we've explored your agency at federalnewsradio.com. Search Agency of the Month.
Government organizations have always sought to serve our nation's citizens, but the rapid evolution of technology and sophistication of cyber threats have made this mission more complex. HPE has the people, the capabilities, and experience to deliver IT solutions to the right place at the right time, securely. HPE Enterprise Services is proud to partner with governments to transform their IT to better support the millions of citizens who rely on them every day. To learn how HPE can help you, visit hpe.com. Hewlett Packard Enterprise, accelerating next.
Did you know babies receive vaccinations that protect them from 14 diseases before they're even 2 years old? Adults, ask your healthcare provider about your vaccination needs and record. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention says older adults need vaccinations to prevent flu, pneumonia, Tdap, hepatitis B, and shingles. Tdap, a combination of vaccine of tetanus, diphtheria, and pertussis, should be given to pregnant women during the third trimester to protect babies from whooping cough. Learn more at cdc.gov/vaccines.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. I have a special guest today. It's Dawn Leaf. She's the recently retired Labor Department Chief Information Officer. Now, Don, you brought up the FITARA challenges, the Federal IT Acquisition Reform Act. In many ways, FITARA has been and is the latest attempt by Congress to really empower federal CIOs. We know the history of Clinger-Cohen back in the 90s. That got the CIOs to a point. They really, the feeling that FITARA really could get CIOs to that next level. Give me a sense. Labor Department has been one of those agencies that's been challenged by FITARA. I know I wrote about earlier in the summer that Labor Department and Energy Department were the two agencies that were kind of behind in getting plans to OMB and getting those plans approved. Talk about FITARA, Labor Department, and your experience with it so far.
First of all, that's absolutely true. It's a matter of public record that the Department of Labor and Energy were the last two of the 24 CFO Act agencies to have an approved plan. I mentioned earlier that the Department of Labor has traditionally had a very siloed, decentralized environment, and FITARA requires a significant cultural change to really have the department start looking at IT from a department perspective. I think one of the things about FITARA that's interesting from a practical standpoint is that it levies responsibilities on the CIOs, but it is not prescriptive in terms of authorities. It defers, and I'm not saying this is wrong, but it defers the method or the definition of authorities to each respective agency. It's up to each agency to figure that out. So if you look at an agency like Commerce, where Steve and I testified together in front of the Government Oversight Committee, it was a very clear direction from the secretary who told the agency heads, you are as responsible for FITARA as the CIO. That is very counter to the Department of Labor's culture. And it's not just with IT. I mean, it's with HR. It's even with things like sharing workspaces. And I don't want to paint too bleak of a picture. You have a lot of agencies, small agencies, that really do understand the efficiencies and look at it from a department perspective. But you also have especially the large, well-funded agencies who have traditionally worked, and I believe in fairness, from their perspective, most effectively in a more siloed approach. So it's just a cultural challenge for the department. And I think you mentioned earlier that you spoke to a predecessor in labor who had more or less provided the same information. And I suspect that was probably true 12 years ago as it is now.
Do you get a sense that that is changing to a certain extent? I mean, one of the challenge with any culture change is it takes time. People have to understand why is this important? What's the change? What were you able to do to kind of help make that culture change happen a little more quickly, or at least speed it up in a sense?
It really has to do with the leadership. And we had two different leadership teams in the Department of Labor. And I want to make it clear, this is not about politics. It's not about whether you have a Republican or a Democratic administration in place. But if you have someone, as we did originally, who's a strong champion of IT, who sees it as a transformational tool of resource, and that direction is set, you can move quickly, like the department did, on cloud email, on some of the infrastructure changes, on preparing the department to get rid of the old legacy 20-year-old networks and security infrastructures. You also have a case where you may have a leadership team that looks at IT more as a utility model and is more comfortable with letting the status quo be the status quo. So I think it really depends on, in this case, what the next administration brings to the Department of Labor as to what direction the department takes and how quickly that happens. I did leave, and of course, it's not appropriate to discuss the contents, but I did leave my own CIO State of Labor IT assessment and recommendations for the leadership team and to inform the State of Federal IT assessment that Tony Scott and OMB is preparing. So I have, you know, some specific recommendations that they may or may not find appropriate. But, you know, those thoughts I've shared.
I think that's important that you left those recommendations. Again, as with anything, you can only do so much. You can tell them what you think. You can tell them where you believe that the best, based on your knowledge and the skills and abilities, and they can do with it what they want. Let's talk about some of those recommendations later on. I know we do talk about, one of the questions I gave you was about advice for the next CIO. So let's bring that up now.
Again, I don't think it would be, especially now that I'm not an official representing the department any longer, to go into specifics. But I think that many of the thoughts that have been shared with respect to FITARA would also apply to the Department of Labor. So again, I don't want to get into really specifics, but generally, I think continuing to support the staff, I mean, remembering the Department of Labor OCIO grew from supporting about 4,000 people to over 18,000 people, or 90% of the employees in a 4 to 5 year period, which is pretty aggressive. So I would just recommend continuing to support that team, remembering how challenging it is, continuing to grow the team.
All right, so I guess it's something that as OMB decides to release, if they release their recommendations, we'll get to see them there. Labor is going to go and hire a new CIO eventually. I'm sure you'll get a phone call from that person or whoever's interested in the job, so you'll have some other time to talk to that person. One other thing about FITARA, do you believe, generally speaking, that FITARA is good for government? Is it good for CIOs? Is FITARA the right path forward at this time?
FITARA is not only good, I think it's essential. If you think about why FITARA came about, and if you think about where data center consolidation came about in the 25-point plan, the federal government is spending over $80 billion a year in IT. And we could certainly be more efficient and effective. And that requires, I mean, forget about authorities for a minute, just practically, it requires top-down planning. If you have a lot of organizations, they may be optimizing for their own program or their own mission or their own space, but they're not looking at IT holistically. And I believe it's essential to do it, not only at the department level, but also at the federal level with federal shared data centers. I was a taxpayer before, I'm still a taxpayer, and that's our money. I think that having an initiative that requires the federal government, and you do have to require it, to think about how to use IT more effectively, to set direction, to leverage the investments, I think it's critical.
The other thing about, I think, FITARA that people forget about is so much of IT is in that commodity world now. When you think about when you buy laptops and desktops, you're just buying a commodity. It's almost, unfortunately, we just throw them out after so many years, they die, it's not worth replacing and fixing. The same thing with printers, the same thing with even mobile devices. I mean, we all get new smartphones. The iPhone 7 comes out, it's time for a new one, or the next Android device, or the Galaxy Note, or whatever it is. Is that part of the reason why the time is right for FITARA? Based on, you know, your career, as you look back, could this have worked 15 years ago? Could this have worked 20 years ago?
I think there's a couple parts to that question. Standardization, of course, could always have worked. You know, using shared procurement, standardizing on a particular component. But what's different is that now we are virtualized. Now we buy our services outside. So all the more reason for real computing services.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can go back to your career a little bit, talk a little bit about some of your accomplishments. My guest is Dawn Leaf, the recently retired Labor Department Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
What are NASA's key science priorities? What is NASA doing to promote science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, or STEM education? When will we have definitive evidence of life outside Earth? Join host Michael Keegan as they explore these questions and more with Dr. Ellen Stofan, NASA's chief scientist. Tune in Mondays at 11 a.m. for the Business of Government Hour on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
My mother was an airman.
My friend was a Marine.
My son was a soldier.
He died by suicide.
On March 21st.
On April 25th,
August
2011.
7th, 2004.
She didn't think there was hope.
He didn't think there was hope.
He didn't think he could be healed.
There is hope for your son.
For your friend.
For your husband.
Treatment can work.
There is hope.
There is help.
You can heal.
For help, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255.
This is John Gilroy. My show, Federal Tech Talk, answers the question, how does technology make life easier for the federal audience? I've spent years interviewing federal CIOs, tech leaders, and big company CTOs. What they tell me is compelling, provocative, and always relevant to the federal government and contractor. Check it out Tuesday and Thursday afternoons at 1 on Federal News Radio 1500 AM or download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Federal Tech Talk.
The Federal News Radio Community Spotlight is the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. Someday, there'll be a cure. Join the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society in its mission to make someday today by taking steps to end cancer at area Light the Night walks, completing an endurance event with team and training, or fundraise through the Student Series program. Donate to help fund critical research and patient programs and learn more about upcoming events at lls.org. Find out more about the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society at federalnewsradio.com. Search partners.
Wednesdays at 11 and 2, DOD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DOD, an illuminating discussion with senior Defense Department managers about how DOD and all the branches meet their mission. From the budget to IT to material to workforce and readiness. On DOD with Jared Serbu, Wednesdays at 11 and 2 on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. Download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search On DOD.
Intel Security is glad the current phase of the Continuous Diagnostics and Mitigation Program is focused on orchestration. This is exactly the right emphasis, and with this phase, civilian agencies should really start to see CDM's value. Orchestration requires integrated connected security, the ability to protect, detect, and correct threats seamlessly. Intel Security looks forward to meeting those needs. DHS designed a great program in CDM. Integrated management and interconnected tools will bring it all together. Visit IntelSecurity.com to learn more.
It may be hard to believe, but people just like you are already saving money. FeedThePig.org makes it easy. Their simple savings plan teaches you how to start saving without going overboard, so you don't need to start foraging wild berries.
I was skeptical, but these are actually pretty good.
You don't need to sell your soul to the devil.
$15 is the best I can do.
You just need FeedThePig.org. Don't get left behind. Get tips and tools at FeedThePig.org. Brought to you by the American Institute of CPAs and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is Dawn Leaf, the recently retired Department of Labor Chief Information Officer. So, Dawn, we've been talking a lot about in the beginning, first two segments, about your early career, your reasons for retirement. And then we got into the discussion on FITARA and the importance of it and how labor is implementing it. Let's talk a little bit, broaden the discussion about your career. What did you enjoy about working for the government the most, and what did you enjoy the least about working for the government? Let's start with the positive side. What did you enjoy the most?
There were two reasons that I left the private sector to come into government. One was that at least when I changed, and that would have been in the early 90s, you could build bigger systems than anyone else in the government. I mean, things have changed a lot now, and you have systems that are as large, and in some cases larger, in the private sector. You don't have them as specialized. So you don't have systems, although obviously the work is done by private sector contractors and firms. The government has a mission that no one else has, and the same reason that you have agencies. I think it's also a more level playing field for women, for minorities. The civil service protections are there for a reason. I don't think of them as red tape. I think of them as being important to help ensure that all employees are treated fairly and have the same opportunities. So those are the two really positive things. My experience having worked half in the private sector and half in government is you have the same challenges in both places. You may not have enough resources. You may have constraints with procurements or with policies. You may have people who are in positions, decision makers that may or may not have a background or an experience in that, and you need to work with that. And that really happens in both places. So I think it's the same.
That's interesting piece about it. One time you could build bigger systems, and now it's this kind of shift where the government's trying to emulate a lot of times the private sector in terms of the systems that they're building, the agile development craze, the DevOps. You always hear, you know, whether it's Netflix or Amazon or Uber or whoever, we want to be more like those types of companies. Is that necessarily a good thing for government to be more like, or there's a time and a place for those types of effort around when it comes to technology?
I don't think the development paradigm is any different. I think, you know, we've used agile development for applications for a long time. There's been a continuum for that. I think, of course, you don't use agile development on infrastructure, okay, because you know have to know how it's going to work exactly. You can't just come up with a, you know, a viable product. There is a very tight specification. You don't fool with that. I think that there are government systems, critical infrastructure systems, that should use a very rigorous, very...
almost like a standards-based approach where you're saying we want to get to point A to point B to point C versus agile, which is, well, we'll start with A and then maybe we'll go to B, but we may go to D and then come back to B. That's the difference I think you're trying to get to, is that sometimes you need that specific path.
Well, that is, but again, I would say on two levels. So with applications, if a government agency is supporting a law, you don't have flexibility necessarily in how you support that law. You may have flexibility in a screen. You may have flexibility in how an application works, but you can't decide the criteria on the fly. But what I was really thinking of, again, is more in mission critical and in infrastructure. There's no forgiveness. There's a zero tolerance for failure. You don't build mission life support systems or systems that could result in loss of life, not only with military, but like in radar, sonar, anti-submarine warfare, FAA. Those systems are very exacting. So again, the work has always been done by contractors. I'm not suggesting that it was ever fully performed by government officials, but ultimately it is that government official or agency who is legally responsible. You can delegate authority, you can't delegate responsibility, and in the end, it's the government that has to stand up for those things.
The other interesting point you made was about it's more of a level playing field for women, for minorities. As a woman in tech, we hear all the time there's not enough diversity in the tech field. Did you feel like coming to government has really gave a boost to your career in a way that maybe you may not have gotten in the industry?
I find it amazing that what is now 35 years later, there are still more men in the tech industry than women. But I think that it also depends on the type of industry. When I worked in the private sector, I was working for an aerospace company that was really dominated by people who had been in the military or had been in the discipline that we supported. And there were just more men than women. In fact, when I left Westinghouse Northrop, there were 800 people in our division. There were about 100 managers, 10 of those were women. And most of those were in the soft sciences. They weren't in engineering. Inside the government, you really do have a push when you hire somebody. And I know the hiring process takes a hit because it takes a while, but you really are looking for the best candidate, regardless of who that person is or where they came from.
The other thing that I think is interesting when you talk about more men than women still in the IT industry, here we are 35 years later, but there are more women CIOs in the federal government than I think I've ever seen before. I mean, I could probably count. There's one time or another, I bet there was half the CIO positions were women.
That's true. But when you sit at the table at the CIO Council with the 24 CFO Act agencies, there's still more men.
That's true. And that's a issue I think that has to be addressed as more women come up through the tech ranks. You'll see more, I think, people get to that. Let me switch gears for a second and talk a little bit more about the frustrations of government. You talked about any large organization has similar frustrations, whether it's industry or not, procurement, hiring. Is there one or two things that you'd kind of point to and say, I wish I could change?
Certainly procurement is a challenge for all IT people. And you can see all perspectives. It's important to make sure that there is a level playing field. At the same time, when you are building something or buying something technical, you have very specific requirements. And the technical people are the ones that I think are best able to assess whether a product or whether an offering satisfies that. So I think there's a constant challenge in trying to balance out the procurement requirements and then what you need to buy to actually do the job.
Did you ever get the sense that it would have been better to, if IT buying, at least for commodity, was you only had one or two places to go, like what you saw with OMB and the laptop desktop memo?
No, I don't think we have too many vehicles. In fact, I think it's great that we can use vehicles from different agencies, because it takes so long to set one up that once you have one that's defined with lots of choices for different technologies and products, that is actually a lifesaver in many occasions.
Versus saying to buy laptops and desktops, as that example I brought up earlier, from GSA, NASA, or NIH, those are your three. Would that have made your job easier as a CIO? Or because your procurement person says, well, I'm going to set up our own vehicle, or I'm going to go through our own GSA schedule, or I'm going to do this differently, did that cause you, as from a CIO's perspective, more challenges?
No, I think actually the challenge, you have two challenges. One is you still have individual agencies or personnel who will go out, you know, find a personal quote from a given vendor and then will come back and say, well, it's this much on GSA's schedule, but I could get it for X dollars lower. And of course, it's probably not apples to apples or oranges to oranges. So having those vehicles and that guidance is really helpful because, well, first of all, procurement costs a lot, takes a lot of time and money to buy something. So having the vehicles, you get the ease of use, and then you also can take some of those, what I would say are discretionary choices, or they're not really essential in providing the service, sort of off the table. And just not, and you can concentrate your energies on those programs or vendors or services that really should be differentiated.
Let's shift over to, when we talk about your career, some accomplishments. When you look back over your 20 plus year career in government, anything, any one project, any one program, any one initiative that really stands out to you that you're very proud of?
I think of it at each place. Okay, so at the Patent and Trademark Office, which was my first Fed job, I'm very proud that we defined an architecture and an engineering path. At the Smithsonian, while I was there as the CTO, we started the digital asset management system to store audio, video, and images for the collections. And they finished that some time ago under Darren Burba, but we started it when I was there, and I'm very proud of that. If I think about the Bureau of Industry and Security, we replaced a 24-year-old legacy case management system. When I think about NIST, of course, I was there to help launch the cloud computing initiative, which, not that they wouldn't have anyway, but while I was there, NIST really became an international leader in cloud computing. And then at labor, of course, we've fixed a lot of things. And I've already mentioned those, so I won't read the list again. But we've made a lot of underlying improvements and really set the department up so that it can now, it is positioned to put in unified communications and get rid of those seven separate siloed legacy network and security infrastructures.
Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we can wrap up our discussion, talk a little bit about more broadly about federal IT. My guest is Dawn Leaf, the recently retired Labor Department Chief Information Officer. I'm your host, Jason Miller, and you're listening to Ask the CIO on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
Why do 8 out of 10 drivers prefer Lyft over the competition? Could be that you earn up to $1,500 a week driving your own car during hours you choose. Give enough rides each week and you can keep up to 95% commission. That's right, 95%. Better yet, we'll start you off with a $500 bonus. That's right, $500 for each new Lyft driver in Washington, D.C. And you'll only earn more from there. Whether you're putting money toward a mortgage, saving for vacation, or just looking for a better way to to earn, choose Lyft. Apply at LyftDC.com. That's LYFTDC.com today. While you jot that down, here's another fun fact. Lyft is the only app that allows tipping, and 60% of our rides tip the driver. Because at Lyft, drivers come first. Be your own boss, pick your own schedule, and get paid weekly. Experience the difference of Lyft and pocket that $500 bonus by applying at LYFTDC.com today. Terms apply.
This hour of news is brought to you by the people of Boeing, who are honored to celebrate the 241st anniversary of the United States Navy. We salute the men and women in uniform and all who have so proudly served.
If you are a cleared government contractor, the following date means a lot. November 30th, the deadline for your company to certify you have implemented a compliant insider threat program to protect our nation's sensitive information. Some of the biggest risks come from within. Let Cipher be your answer in ensuring national security with comprehensive insider threat solutions. Don't miss the deadline. Contact Cipher now. Learn more at cipher-sys.com.
This is Roger Waldron, president of the Coalition for Government Procurement and host of Off the Shelf. My show brings a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Each week, I talk to experts from inside and outside government about the latest federal compliance and policy information for government contractors. Join me every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 a.m. for Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM or download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Off the Shelf.
Here's Robert Guerrero, the Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Air Force for Operational Energy, Office of the Assistant Secretary of Air Force for Installations, Environment, and Energy, on the American Readiness, Technological Innovation in Energy and Fuel, sponsored by Honeywell.
The two processes that produce alternate fuels, to include fuels that are used off of bioproducts, are hydro-renewable jet, and the other one's called Fischer-Tropsch. They're the most popular.
To listen to the whole program, log on to federalnewsradio.com, search Honeywell.
Nearly 50% of Honeywell's products deliver energy efficiency benefits across multiple business sectors. As a well-established partner with the U.S. Armed Services, Honeywell is directly aligned with the federal government's plan for energy savings and security in the U.S. and overseas. From Honeywell's advanced turbine engines and flight management systems, to upgrades to federal facilities and campuses, to drop-in biofuels. Learn how Honeywell is helping the world meet its energy challenges. Visit Honeywell.com.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ask the CIO on FederalNewsRadio.com and 1500 AM. I'm your host, Jason Miller. My guest is the recently retired CIO of the Labor Department, Dawn Leaf. Dawn, we've been spending a lot of time talking about your career and things you've accomplished. One thing about federal IT that I always love asking people who've spent a lot of their career in is evolution. What are the change they've seen? I did one interview with someone who came in and said, well, when I started, there was one phone for the entire office. Or, you know, when I started, people couldn't believe how you could put a phone on every desk, or they could smoke and open the windows, stuff like that. So when we talk IT, we talk about government, talk either one, what are some of the biggest changes that you've seen over your career?
There are a couple. I mean, first of all, business really now depends on IT. It's not a nicety if you lose email service, if you lose network connectivity. They can't work. So it's critical. IT has changed. It's no longer, and I mentioned this a little earlier, computing that is on an on-premise machine with dedicated hardware and software. We now really have a ubiquitous model. And it's not just cloud computing, but just off-site hosting and the dependency on the network. So it's a totally different model. The good and bad in that, you know, one of the negative things is, of course, the cyber threat. And that is separate from but related to how computing has changed because of the way we use wide area networks, because it's no longer the defense in depth model with the traditional security features like a firewall or IDS or IPS. It's much broader than that. And we really are in a place, I believe, where nation states think of, and I'm not saying anything that's revolutionary, but nation states think of cyber as the current most serious weapon to go after not only our critical infrastructure, but to recruit. I mean, look at the whole ISIS recruiting model. IT, there's good and bad in the dependency on IT, because it's a positive thing and it's also increases the threat.
When you were coming into the government and there was, you know, the Wang computers on every desk or the early, you know, 286s, did you have any kind of feeling like, oh, you know, in 20 years, we're all going to be wearing, you know, Google Glass, even though we didn't know what that was back then? Or did you, or was there something that you thought would be the greatest thing since, you know, sliced bread that just didn't come to fruition?
Again, I came from private industry. So I was building robotic systems way back, automated systems with AI systems back in the 80s even. So there was always that piece of cutting edge technology, that piece of automation. So I wasn't really surprised in that way. We had been building embedded systems, right, for weapon systems or for control systems. I think in terms of what has changed, it's got to be mobile devices. Everybody knew there would be mobile devices, but I don't really think we understood how, again, you would have people so dependent on their device that they couldn't have dinner without them.
That's probably the biggest change from your retirement. You're not going to be able to check your BlackBerry. Oh, you probably don't have a BlackBerry anymore. Your iPhone or your Android device, right, anymore. That's like the biggest change in retirement. You don't have to worry about the network going down and the secretary calling and all those other challenges. Well, let me go back to cybersecurity for a second as well. Post-Cyber Sprint, a lot of focus from federal CIOs. Do you get a sense that that was the turning point over the last 8 years? Is the OPM hack led to the cyber sprint where all of a sudden you did get much better focus from top-down leadership?
That's an interesting point. In IT, both in the private sector and public sector, there has been an awareness of the importance of cybersecurity for a very long time. I mean, that's our bread and butter, because we really can't function unless we have both well-performing and secure networks and infrastructure. I think that one thing that Tony Scott did that was great is that he put a line in the sand and said, you know, you're not going to get by, you, the agencies, with just fixing your two-factor authentication when you have money, when you can do it. We're going to measure and we're going to publish it. And that got the attention of leadership, which was very necessary, I think, and very critical. So I do think that that was positive. I think that having IT security discussed at the secretary and deputy secretary level was very helpful and important. The thing with OPM that's interesting is that there are many, many organizations that are in the position that OPM was in, where they have been trying to improve the security for decades and haven't been able to get the funding and support to do that. So I think it's unfortunate that, and now I can say this, I'm retired, I probably would have said it before, that it was the very people in place who identified and exposed the issue and then tried to fix it that actually bore the brunt of the responsibility, when they are not actually the people that created the issue. And I say that because I think of that with respect to the department too. If you've got 20 or 30 year old systems, obviously that is not something that happened in the last 2 to 4 years. That is a model that has been going on for decades of underinvestment and inability or unwillingness to focus on the priority of investing in your IT systems and keeping them reliable and keeping them secure.
In many ways, you walked into a very similar situation at Labor. You guys were underfunded. You had asked for more money. You and I have talked about this. And Labor could never get through the obstacles, whether it was Congress or the White House or whomever, to get that extra funding. You finally got some, and you probably looked at your infrastructure and said, what's our most important need? And probably infrastructure changes, improvements related to cyber was probably near at the top of your list.
Well, it was at the top of the list. OMB was pretty supportive in 13 for the 15 budget and 14 for the 16 budget in proposing that the Department of Labor receive funding for not only critical infrastructure, but a digital platform to support mobile computing for the agencies. If you look at what the department investment for a digital integrated platform would be, it's half of what the cost is if separate agencies fund it individually. But I think there's a couple things there. Congress, of course, has to appropriate the money, but also the department needs to look holistically at what they're spending. If you look at the load on the networks for cloud computing, mobile computing, larger data, VTC, all the things that the agencies want to do for to support their missions, you can't do that without a well-performing network. You have to get to the cloud somehow. So again, I think that it's not just outside, but inside, that the department really needs to look at that holistically in terms of priorities.
Very interesting. Dawn, thank you so much for taking the time. This has been a great, if you will, exit interview. My guest was the recently retired Labor Department CIO, Dawn Leaf. Thank you for your time today. And obviously, thank you for your 20-plus years of federal service.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Ask the Chief Information Officer. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, Ask the CIO, Thursday mornings at 10:30, only on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM.
You know, the mantra in Washington is follow the money. Everybody says it, hardly anybody does it. But we do, every week on Your Turn with Mike Causey. Whether it's your pay raise, a major change to your retirement package, or the chances of layoffs, we're on it. Because we really do follow the money, and it's your money. Give us a listen Wednesday morning at 10 a.m. on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m., or download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search Your Turn.
Here's Dominic Sale, Deputy Associate Administrator, GSA, on the Federal Executive Forum on Data Center Consolidation and Optimization Strategies in Government, sponsored by Software AG Government Solutions.
And this is a huge cultural shift, a big technology shift, and the people who work in data centers now, they need to be upskilled or differentially skilled, sure, to move to the next generation. Excellent. In the government, that's a unique challenge.
To listen to the whole program from Trezza Media Group, log on to federalnewsradio.com, search Federal Executive Forum.
How do IT investments align to the agency's mission? Where should we prioritize the next modernization or consolidation effort? Those don't have to be hard questions to answer, at least not with Software AG Government Solutions at your side. Software AG helps agencies know their IT assets, better prioritize and execute consolidation efforts, and have a measurable plan to their modernization strategy and FITARA implementation. Visit softwareaggov.com to learn more.
Does this sound familiar? You're about to get intimate with someone, and then nothing. You can't do it. Male performance issues are devastating and embarrassing. And who are you going to talk to? Your friends? Your wife? Your dad? So you suffer alone. This is a common story for half of men, but it doesn't have to be. Talk to Boston Medical Group. Men, if you have performance issues, then you need to call Boston Medical Group. They've helped thousands of men just like you, and their treatment is 98% effective, even for men who can't take prescription medications like Viagra or Cialis. You'll receive a personalized blend of FDA-approved medications formulated to treat performance problems, and their medications work in minutes. They're so confident, if you don't see results with the very first treatment, you pay nothing. So one phone call, one very professional visit, and you could be enjoying romance again. Stop suffering. Call now. 800-885-3232. That's 800-885-3232. 800-885-3232.
If you've ever worked for a large company that provides services to a customer, at some point you may have said,
I think I might be able to do this better on my own.
Well, this is a show for people who actually take the step off the ledge and fend for themselves in the cutthroat world that is government contracting. I'm Alan Scott of Columbia Technology Partners and host Ready to Prime, part information, part inspiration, and all small business. Heard the last Tuesday of every month on Federal News Radio 1500 AM or on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Ready to Prime.
Hi, I'm Jared Serbu, the host of Federal News Radio's On DoD. Join me each week for a close-up view of the Defense Department from the management perspective. We examine the department from every angle with interviews with top brass and industry experts. It's reliable information from the people in the know. That's On DoD, every Wednesday at 11 o'clock and 2 o'clock Eastern on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM, or download it anytime at federalnewsradio.com. Search On DoD.
My mother was an airman.
My friend was a Marine.
My son was a soldier.
He died by suicide.
On March 21st.
On April 25th,
August 2011. 7th, 2004.
She didn't think there was hope.
He didn't think there was hope.
He didn't think he could be healed.
There is hope for your son.
For your friend.
For your husband.
Treatment can work.
There is hope.
There is help.
You can heal.
For help, call the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255.
Actionable intel you can use. Download our free expert edition ebooks at federalnewsradio.com. Search ebook. WFED Washington, WWWT FM HD2 Manassas, WTLP FM HD2 Braddock Heights Frederick, the Washington, D.C. home of Navy Athletics.